This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is off today. Well, ever since Edward Snowden leaked NSA documents that revealed that the United States government is collecting enormous sets of email and telephone records from everyday Americans, the word metadata has gone from unfamiliar to some to electric. So metadata is essentially data about data. And that, even if an abstract notion, makes it extremely informative. It reveals a lot about who you are, who you know, and what you do, which is all useful for groups such as the National Security Agency. But can you put metadata to use for you? Well, Cesar Hidalgo is a professor at MIT's Media Lab, and he's been examining metadata for almost a decade, and he's recently launched an online tool to help individuals visualize their own email metadata and then take control of it. He joins us now in the studio. Cesar Hidalgo, welcome to Radio Boston.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start by just asking you the biggest, broadest question of them all. From your perspective, describe to me what exactly is metadata.
Well, you know, in my circle, we call metadata data, because usually you're never going to have data about content. So think that, you know, just to go away from the examples that everybody has been talking about, think that you have international trade. So when you have international trade, you know, you're going to have a register of, like, you know, how many bananas went out of the port of Guatemala and which day. And that would be metadata about the export of bananas by Guatemala in that case. You know, when you have your cell phone, information on, you know, who you call and when and how long that call was, that would be another example of metadata. In your health records, you know, the claims for the codes that the health insurance used to reimburse you, that would be metadata.
Okay. So it's everything from, let's say I'm using the camera on my cell phone. It identifies the phone that it came from, the location that the picture was taken, copyright information, even if I want that to be included in metadata as
exactly.
Well.
Exactly. So all kind of like those little tags that are tied to that larger file. So the picture that you took with your phone, that would be, let's say, the data, and the metadata would be that additional information that the file system is using it to organize it and keep it in place.
Okay, so this is the reason why it's so useful for people who want to do data analysis, because you know, it's discrete pieces of information that you can, you know, really jam through a computer and get a lot of information out of. You don't not have to have like natural language processing or
exactly.
Anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that and eventually that's why usually most of studies they would focus on using, you know, metadata rather than the content, simply because, you know, mining the content is a challenge on itself. So that's exactly correct.
Okay. So tell us about this new project that you've launched at the MIT Media Lab that puts metadata in a new way in the hands of individuals like you and me.
So the project started a little bit differently. It started a year ago. So actually took us quite some time to create it. And the project started by a very simple insight. And I believe most people share this feeling, that is the feeling of being overwhelmed by your own emails. Okay, so I was very overwhelmed by my own emails as a young faculty. I need to travel a lot to get, you know, my research out there and everything. And when my student joined, I said, you know what, I'm very overwhelmed by my emails. Do you think it would be possible to create sort of like an interface to email that would be visual? So like a visual email inbox.
Okay, well, first of all, there's a lot of ways to be overwhelmed by email. I mean, I am, because at my work email here at WBUR, I'm verging on 30. Let me look at it right now. 30,000 unread messages. This is even overwhelmed by the volume of it. Is that what you're talking about, or
so
the complexity?
I think it's both, because obviously, like what I've learned with the tool, if you log into Immersion, you're going to know the amount of emails that you sent and you receive. I send every year 7,000 emails, and I petered out. Like this year, last year, and the year before was 7,000 emails. At 10 words an email, that's 70,000 words. That's a nonfiction book. Okay? At 100 words an email, that's typing the Bible, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. So eventually what happens is that you have to become more strategic about who you email, because you cannot email more, you know. So you have this overwhelming effect in which you have the high volume, and then you have to start choosing the people that you're going to reply to. Mm-hmm. And the interface of email doesn't help you with that, because it sorts people by the time that they send the email. So you have
it's
an email from
list.
Your grandma, you know, and everyone else. So this tool basically shows you who's at the core of your network, who's at the periphery, and then you can decide whether you want to strengthen that core or you want to explore that periphery, but it makes it more conspicuous of how you're actually interacting with a web of people rather than with single individuals.
Okay, listeners, I'm speaking talking with Cesar Hidalgo. He's a professor at MIT's Media Lab. He's created a new tool, or he and his team have created a new tool called Immersion, and there's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. And if you click on that link, you go to Immersion, and you put in your Gmail address. And it's really only your Gmail address
now? Only works with Gmail.
Okay. Yeah. And what happens is it creates a visualization, essentially a map of who you've written to. It's like a star chart. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
Constellations of people that I've written to over the past years. Is that a good description of it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so what we have is we make a network representation, and I believe that most people now is familiar with the concept of a network. It's just like nodes and links. The big dots are going to be the people that you interact a lot with. You know, the little dots, the one that you interact a little with. And these people are connected if they have been in the same messages. And now, obviously, you can look at how the network looked 5 or 6 years ago, how it looks now, and you can see it change. And that actually, for many people, is very emotional.
Yeah, okay. So I want to talk to you about that in a second, because that was one of the first things that I noticed. But listeners, what's your question for Cesar Hidalgo about metadata and how you might be able to put it to use for you? Do you believe metadata is harmless, or do you think seeing it might actually be an emotional experience for you? How would you change your online behavior if you had a powerful visualization tool regarding all that metadata that we're producing, thousands and thousands and thousands of data points every single day just by existing as digital beings? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So, Cesar, I have to say, I ran my Gmail address through Immersion, your tool, today, and that little sort of constellation chart of people that I've been writing to for the past, I don't know, 8 years or so came up. And first thing I noticed is that it does change dramatically over time. And that, I'm not sure if I felt emotional about it, but I understand that that's a reaction that you've said many people have felt, just seeing their networks change over time. And why is that so emotional?
Well, I think, you know, because ultimately metadata is almost always about, you know, people and about interactions that you have with someone. So in some sense, each one of these emails that we're mining, or like this from to and CC that we're mining in the tool, you know, it represents an act of communication that you had. And for some people, that this becomes very emotional is when they have realized that, for example, there was a person that was very important in their life that is not there anymore. You know, and you sort of like see that decline, if it was that the relationship went sour, or if for that reason the relationship actually disappears, you know, for a more major cause. So it helps you walk like by memory lane, and you realize that sort of like there is a social landscape that is changing, you know, and that there are like these transition points in your life, and there's some people that have survived them. So I think there is an emotional experience, because if I look at your immersion, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
But for you, each one of these points, you know, has an emotional baggage for good and for bad. And that's, I think, why it's an emotional experience.
So I think for me, the emotion that I experienced was one of just a sad realization of how mundane my life has been over the past many years. Because, no, really, the visualization that came up for me included, you know, a big sort of cluster of connections with, you know, my very best friends and family, which would make a lot of sense because you communicate with them. And then off to the side, there was this persistent glob of networks for my condo association. That was the other biggest one of them all. But to that point, I just wonder, so in an emotional realization of how your social landscape changes over time is interesting, but for me, it seemed to only confirm what I already essentially knew about my life. I mean, so it didn't seem to, on first glance, show me anything new. And that's what I was thinking, sort of complex analyses of metadata is supposed to allow us to do, is really gain new insights to how we live.
Yeah, so absolutely. If you're a person that does not have too many emails in that account, everything that is going to appear there is obvious. Now, for me, I decided to start working on that tool because actually, you know, it was not that obvious, because I have a large volume. So we count as a contact people that you have exchanged at least 3 emails with. You know, and I had like around 1,700 contacts, Okay, so that's a lot of contacts. And when you start having a heavy email user, the tool becomes more useful, you know, because basically you are looking at a set of people that is larger than the one that you can kind of like keep on your short-term memory. So that's, I think, that the tool from that perspective is more useful for people that are on this overwhelming side of the spectrum by the sheer number of people, not simply the volume of messages.
Mm. So how do you think a tool like Immersion, the one you've created, differs from some of the other analytics tools that are already out there? Like, I mean, you're using people's Gmail addresses. I could go to Gmail Analytics, Google Analytics right now, and actually find possibly more sophisticated layers of analysis about my email usage and interaction.
Well, Google Analytics is actually like a tool to look at the traffic of websites. So it doesn't provide you with that layer of information of your metadata. Like, there are options in some of these sites, you know, to download that data, you know, and there are options that are kind of like hidden, you know, in like the settings and of the settings of the settings. But, you know, you will not be able to visualize them without a tool like the one that we have created. So what we're doing is nothing else than creating a very simple interface that allows you to access that data in a way that is digestible by your brain, mm-hmm. you know, because you can download that data simply, you know, by writing a little piece of code, but what you're going to get is like a text file that is thousands of lines long with, you know, some structured fields, and you will not be able to see the patterns. So right. We create like that front end for the patterns, but that's sort of like the simple difference.
Okay, so but that simple difference is quite a big one, because it by creating this visualization, it gives you an almost immediate connection to to what the metadata are. So, you know, you talked about the emotional connection and emotional revelation that the visualization gives you, but once that's passed, how does seeing your metadata and seeing your networks and who you're interacting with through something as straightforward as email, how does that help us take control of it? That's the question.
Control of the data or control of our actions?
Control of our actions. Let's start there.
Yeah. So I can tell you like my personal experience because I'm the oldest user of Immersion. So I started using the tool like in the fall last year as it was being developed. You know, and I went through like, you know, all of the iterations and I kept on going. And basically the way that I use it now as a regular user is I go like once a week at the end of the week, and I use it sort of like to get like a picture of everything that happened that week, you know, all of the interactions that were active and how the web has been woven during that week. And the way that I change is that I used to be much more like outward focused. So I used to be accepting a lot of like, you know, travel invitations or going to conferences and presenting and you know, and I started to realize that the life that I was living was one in which I was not focused on interacting enough with my students and my group, which is actually the people that I need to interact in order to create things.
Oh, interesting. Because so the sort of visual star field around your students wasn't as big as...
Exactly. You know, so I realized, well, these guys should be my center. They're not my center. Okay, so what I started to do is I said, well, you know what? I'm going to change, you know? So last December, it was like the fall semester was horrible. It was a lot of trips. I made like 9 international trips, you know, during the semester. And then I said, you know what? I'm not traveling anymore. You know, I'm going to stay here. Like, I'll tell people when they invite me, like, thank you, but no thank you. And then I started to focus by working on them. And now they're the core of my network. And also, they are the place where my network is starting to expand from, you know, because they cannot be a periphery for me. They have to be also a place in which, you know, then I connect them with people and then the network grows from there. Mm-hmm. So the network doesn't need to grow from me, it should need to grow from them. So it actually helped me change the way that I try to interact with my grad students and manage the group and do research.
That is fascinating. So does that make you think that, I mean, that brings me to this larger question of who should own metadata, if anyone at all. And I suppose the big companies like Google would say that, you know, it's flowing through our servers using our application, so we own that metadata. But should that be the case?
So I have a strong position in which people should own their own data. So in some sense, if you think about the way that we design the site, one of the interesting design features is that you can delete the data. Okay, you cannot delete the data in most other sites, because when you delete the data, what they do is they flag it as deleted, but they don't actually delete it, you know? So like the way that I think about probably the best analogy is to think about data as the money that you put in the bank. So if you go to Bank of America and one day you say, you know what? I don't want to do business with you guys anymore. You get a cashier's check. You take your cashier's check. You go to Cambridge Trust. You deposit it there. You start a new bank account. And that's it. It was your money. The bank was managing it and, you know, was making it grow or whatever, was giving you services with it, but you are free to withdraw it and take it someplace else. When it comes to our data, we cannot do that right now. You know, we cannot withdraw it from Google and take it to Yahoo.
No, in fact,
and
you're just giving it away.
That means that we don't own it.
Right.
Okay? So, and there's a lot of systemic problems that emerge from that we can talk about.
Well, so to talk about it a little more, what do you think the systemic problems are?
So, like, there is a new type of monopoly that emerges when, you know, you have people that have access to data and the people that the data is from cannot take that data away. So let me give you an example. Think of a search engine. So search engines work, you know, because they have clever algorithms, but also because they have data on the past searches that people have done and on the things that they've clicked on, okay? So a major search engine like Google, you know, works well because of having that data on past searches and use that to train their machine learning algorithms,
right,
and whatnot. Now, let's say that you wanted to start a new search engine. So you might have like a very clever group of engineers. You might be able to crawl the entire web, but then at some point, your results are not going to be as good because you don't have that training data.
That's right.
So you have kind of like that monopoly in which there's a huge barrier to entry associated with the fact that some people have the data and the other ones that would want to enter that market would not. You know, so there's a new type of, you know, monopoly because this is a constraint that you cannot overcome by just having money, you know?
So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense because those sort of first to the market, first to the field have the longest time to have their machine systems learn with all of this metadata that comes to hand. But I am interested in, you're actually, through the tool that we were talking about, Immersion, that you and your team at the MIT Media Lab have created, it's sort of an entirely new relationship that we can form with our metadata, because with the story of the NSA's surveillance of metadata, you know, for millions of people, it seems to me that in recent times we've sort of had this sense of concern anytime the word comes up. But now you seem to be saying that basically taking control and understanding your metadata, it can be a source of empowerment, digital empowerment.
Absolutely, yeah. So, like, the analogy that I would like to use there is sort of like the analogy of the car. So when the car was invented, car crashes were invented together with it. So every technology that you create is always, you know, going to have both positive and negative effects. And the internet is a relatively new technology, emails, you know, and cell phones, and all of these technologies that actually require data to operate are relatively new. They have positive aspects that we sort of, like, are familiar with, and they also might have, you know, some sort of negative aspects, and in order to mitigate those negative aspects, you need to develop institutions or new technologies. Now, I think that what has happened is that we have not had those conversations. You know, I haven't seen the topic of metadata being brought up by any politician before, you know, Snowden brought it into the table. So eventually, I think that hopefully what we're going to have now is we're going to start having those conversations. We're going to have people in Washington started to differentiate not only with respect to their views according to education or immigration, but also with respect to their views with respect to the internet and about data and those type of things. And I think that's an interesting time.
Okay, so in the last minute or so that we have, tell us what's up next for the tool Immersion, because right now you have to have a Gmail account and it shows you people that you've been interacting with over time and numbers of emails sent and received. But metadata, as we talked about at the very beginning of the conversation, has a ton of information in it, you know, geolocation, all that stuff. Are you going to add additional layers of complexity to the tool?
Well, we hope to add additional layers, and we hope to add also additional features. So, like, probably you've experienced some of those days in which you haven't had a chance to look at your email all day or maybe in a couple of days, and then you come back and you see, like, all of these emails, and you have to fish the ones that matter from the ones that don't. So imagine now, like, all of that network and immersion was grayed out, and only the nodes that send you an email would light up. It would be much easier to go fishing for the important emails in that representation because they are the ones that are, you know, from the people that is central, that is connected. You will know which networks are the ones that are active. So just by having that picture, we say, oh, okay, it's maybe all of the people in my condo association, something happened, you know. So one hope would be to eventually develop this into a little bit of a more interactive client. But obviously, we're a really, really, really small team. So, you know, that's something that we might be able to work out on. Maybe we won't.
Okay. Well, best of luck to you, because it was a very interesting experience, I have to say, seeing a picture of my metadata and the connections that are revealed by those simple pieces of data that you never see in an actual email.
I say it's an out-of-body experience.
Out-of-body and on the screen. Well, yeah. Cesar Hidalgo is head of the Macro Connections Group at the MIT Media Lab. He's a professor of media arts and sciences at MIT as well. You can find more information and a link to his immersion project on metadata. It's at our website, radioboston.org. Cesar Hidalgo, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure.
Well, listeners, stick with us, because coming up, we'll talk about Winslow Homer at the Clark in Williamstown. Sebastian Smee, the Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic, joins us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.